Our talk today is treatment clarifies thought. That's one of the chapters in the book, The Anatomy of Healing Prayer, by Dr. Ernest Holmes, the founder of Religious Science. And this first photograph is a picture of the Church of Religious Science, the founders. And this was something very special with Dr. Holmes. He had dreamed and planned of this for a couple of decades before it was finally built. And during the opening treatment that he gave on the very first day speaking in this beautiful edifice, he said, "The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silent before him." Those were the first words spoken. And he said of himself, he said, "I'm a sentimental old fool," because he said the first time he entered this chapel that he had tears. He was so moved to see this actually completed and to be in it. And his vision was worldwide to spread the word of this new teaching. And I wanted to read to you what he said in this very first sermon. He said, "We are consecrating this beautiful, this magnificent edifice to the teaching in simplicity, but with profoundness, that every man has access to all the power there is, to all the presence there is, to the only life there is, and that he discovers the only God there is in the secret place of the Most High within himself." Now this picture is a mural that is behind where the choir sits in this church, and it's called The Wisdom of the Ages. And the significance of it is Dr. Holmes collected symbols over the years, and this mural contains 102 symbols. And he felt that architecture, art, and poetry contained symbols that could refer the mind back to the perfect pattern of spirit. That must be really beautiful to see in person.
Where is it?
Yeah, where is it?
It's in Los Angeles.
I've been there, but I don't remember seeing that. So we'll have to make a field trip.
Yeah.
Absolutely. When Connie first gave me the two books for the lectures that I'm doing this year, it was wonderful because Ernest Holmes was alive during the time that I started in Science and Mind, but I don't remember him. I'm sure I heard him because I sang in the choir for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
At this Wiltern Theater. This is in Los Angeles, and it's a huge theater. Has a huge balcony, and it seats about 3,000 people.
Oh,
and it was full every Sunday. Sunday. And the minister when I was there was Dr. William Hornaday.
Oh.
And we had the most wonderful experiences because many celebrities, you know, being right there in Los Angeles,
right. Mm-hmm.
Many, some of them were members and others were guests. The ones that I remember the most was Peggy Lee. She had come by herself. She had also come with Louis Armstrong.
Oh.
We got to hear Louis Armstrong sing and play.
Uh-huh.
And Peggy Lee is a member. And also Anne Francis, the actress, was also a member of Science and Mind. And I don't know if any of you are old enough to remember Adele Davis, who wrote some of the beginning health books.
Mm-hmm.
She was also a member of Science and Mind and would come as a guest speaker. So it's a wonderful experience. but I, you know, I've racked my brain, and I have no remembrance of Ernest Holmes in person. And so reading these books just brought him alive for me, just absolutely, from the very first pages, just gave me a sense of who he was that I had never had before, even though I had gone through the classes and, you know, read the Science of Mind textbook, but he was never real to me before. So this was just absolutely amazing for me. And this next photograph, this is the stage in the Weltrin Theater, and behind that curtain was where we sat in the choir and where the podium was for the speakers.
Is it still there?
It's there, yes.
And it's still used as a theater, I hope?
It's used as a theater, yeah. I looked it up online, and they're still have performances there and movies and different events.
That's amazing.
It's a gorgeous theater. Of course, I haven't seen it in a lot of years. And there's Peggy Lee, mm-hmm. Both by herself and then also with Louis Armstrong.
Oh, what a gorgeous picture.
Mm-hmm. I love the look, the one on the right, the joy in their faces.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's Anne Francis. Mm. And even though I heard Dr. Hornaday speak for many, many Sundays, since I was sitting right behind him in the choir, there was a whole lot I didn't know until I started reading these books and doing research on Founders Church. And this is an article that was published, and it says, one of the world's leading teachers and ministers of metaphysics is Reverend William H.D. Hornaday of Founders Church of Religious Science in Los Angeles. Affectionately known as Dr. Bill to his congregation of over 7,000, Reverend Hornaday recently celebrated his 39th year as a minister of religious science. In fact, both the city of Los Angeles and the state of California proclaimed a Dr. Bill Hornaday Day in honor of his 35th anniversary. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And it said that he's a former business executive. Dr. Hornaday earned his Doctor of Divinity in 1952 and studied under such prominent people as Carl Jung, Albert Schweitzer, Karl Barth, and Reinhold Niebuhr. So that was amazing. And then the other side of that as well, I found another article that said that Dr. Hornaday went on tour and visited multiple countries, anywhere from England all the way to Africa. He went around the world teaching about religious science. So he was really something. I had no idea. Of course, I was 12, 13, 14 years old, so it's nice to find out what grand company I was in back in those days. This is a photo of the Crystal Cathedral, and my mother and I used to visit it once in a while when we were living in Torrance, California, which is about 45 minutes away from where the Crystal Cathedral stands. And it's a beautiful, beautiful church to go into. It's all glass, and you can sit there and watch the birds and the clouds and occasional airplanes going over and listen to these sermons. At that time it was Dr. Robert Schuller who founded the church, and he started his church on the top of a car in a drive-in theater.
Wow.
Isn't
that a picture?
So one of the things that just seeing this picture reminded me of is that many times in my lifetime people have said, well, are you a Christian? And, you know, I've always said yes, but I wasn't quite sure you know, am I really a Christian? Because I don't believe the way that a lot of fundamental Christians believe. So I found a passage from Dr. Ernest Holmes, which is his statement about Religious Science Church. Let's see if I can find it here. He said, "We are a teaching and a practical order in the Christian faith who believe in two fundamental realities, the divine presence, next a power for good and the law of good in the universe, greater than we are, that we can use for definite and specific purposes." He says, "We do not look upon God as a principle, but as a presence." So I thought that was great. So back to our chapter on treatment clarifies thought. And I also wanted to mention that kind of the subheading for me in this talk, something that just kept coming up for me, is interconnectedness. Mm-hmm. So you'll notice that there's things that I'll bring out that have to do with that. In this chapter, Ernest Holmes starts by saying, "Few people realize that a treatment is a conviction or belief you put in your own words, and that the universe is made out of words." He says, "This is the most difficult thing we have to believe. The universe is made out of words." And he says, "Treatment is clear thinking. I think it lets in more light than there was, more power, more love, more wisdom, opens a mystical doorway to a greater awareness when we treat. Our whole theory is based on the concept that there's no difference between the thought and what it does, no difference between the thought and the form it takes." So the universe is made out of words. That's very powerful. Now here's a photograph of Dr. Albert Einstein. Dr. Holmes had a real affinity for this man and for science as a whole. He quotes Dr. Einstein a great deal through these two books that I was reading, but also the other scientists. He was very, you know, very broad in his concepts. And Dr. Albert Einstein proposed that energy, which is invisible, and mass, which means physical form, are equal, identical, and interchangeable. You can change mass into energy, and energy into mass. And Quimby says that matter is mind in form, and mind is matter in solution. If one could take a picture of the objective circumstances and a picture of his subjective mentality, he would find them to be identical, for one is the cause of the other. One is the image, and the other is the reflection of that image. We live in mind, and it can return to us only what we think into it. This photo is representing the cosmos, and in the Science of Mind textbook it says, "The universe is alive, conscious, aware, and awake. It is love and life. It is law and order. It is a cosmos." Interestingly enough, last month when I was working on this, the Science of Mind magazine has Dr. Einstein on the cover. And it says Einstein's Cosmic Religion. Actually two articles in here with Dr. Einstein. And the one is the Cosmic Religion, and another one is a topic that Dr. Holmes spoke on one of his radio shows. He spoke about let's see if I can remember what he said. Oh, the title of his talk was God and Dr. Einstein. which I thought was great. Oh, and also during those earlier days, Dr. Holmes and Dr. Hornaday had a radio show that was on 2 days a week in speaking on Sides of Mind. And Dr. Buck, who was author of the book Cosmic Consciousness, defines cosmic consciousness as one's consciousness of his unity with the whole. One of the things that Dr. Einstein said was that the Buddhists come closest to practicing the cosmic religion. And he says, the cosmic religion, the religious experience, is the strongest and the noblest driving force behind scientific research. So what is this cosmic religion? What it is not is a religion based on either fear or moral values. He says that only exceptionally gifted individuals, or especially noble communities, rise above these levels and find a third level, the cosmic religious experience. He must have been talking about us. The individual feels the nobility and marvelous order which are revealed in nature and in the world of thought. He also said there are only two things that are infinite, the universe and human folly. And he wasn't so sure about the universe. And this photograph is about the Through the Wormhole, which is a TV show with Morgan Freeman. Have any of you watched this?
Mm-hmm.
It's an entire series, and there was one on Einstein himself, and then the one that I want to talk about is one called The Sixth Sense. And in this one, it talks about a 12-year experiment with random number generators using ones and zeros and 348 worldwide independent studies were part of this for 12 years, and it shows universal consciousness. And it says, thoughts into collective consciousness across the world show that when large number of peoples share emotional feelings and thoughts, it can be tracked. An example was the 2008 presidential election of President Obama. The graph spiraled upwards beginning at the point it was announced he was winning. But the most amazing result was on September 11th, 2001. With the terrorist attacks, the data began to change at 4:30 a.m., hours before the first plane hit, and then spiked and spiraled upwards after the planes began hitting. And this is premonition, the one and only time it spiked before the happening began. And Dr. Roger Nelson, in charge of the experiment, said it was the first and only time the experiment showed global premonition, with no explanation why. So I thought that was quite powerful, the interconnectedness and the universal consciousness.
What is that a measure of?
They have the numbers. They're using the ones and the zeros, and then they show when that spiked, it's more the number of, I don't know if it's emotions, what triggers it, but they all do these graphs, and this was what it showed worldwide, was this graph of people's reaction to what was happening.
But where did the ones and zeros come from?
Yeah.
The random generator. The random generator.
But it wasn't as random back on those days.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what Dr. Holmes said about words, and once again, he said, some words will have all power, all words will have some power. And he said, the word that has all power must be a word to which we have surrendered everything that contradicts it. And what he means by that is, if we're treating for abundance, we have to surrender lack. If we're treating for peace, we have to surrender all the confusion that we're feeling. If we're treating for love, we have to release all unlovingness that we have. And about health, he says, it's not easy to treat for health when we're in pain, but it is possible. He says, we have to get ourselves out of the way long enough to know the truth that the condition doesn't have any reality. When we pray believing, we erase false ideas from our inner thought, then the Spirit can make the gift of health. And I was reminded that in Connie's talk last month, she went over the five steps of treatment, which was recognition, unification, realization, thanksgiving, and release. We're told to pray without ceasing and expect an answer. And in doing so, in time, discover our whole inward thinking passing from negation to affirmation. And I love this book, The Sacred Continuum, which is Our Life Between Prayers, by Stephanie Sorensen. And she says, we must consciously live our prayers and choose our thoughts carefully, moment to moment, if we want to change our lives. As we learn to think and speak all of the time, as if we truly know our relationship to that presence in which we live and move and have our being, we consciously experience the power of our word in every moment. And in the Science of Mind textbook, I found this paragraph that I really love. It says, there's not enough to confess that God is the only power there is. It's only when this consciousness of power is hooked to the dynamo of the mind that there is generated through the imagination an embodiment of that which is able to loose it in any direction it sees fit.
Could you read that again, please?
Okay. It is not enough to confess that God is the only power there is. It is only when this consciousness of power is hooked to the dynamo of the mind that there is generated, through the imagination, an embodiment of that which is able to loose it in any direction it sees fit. Now, I tie that in with the unification. It's saying it's not enough to say God is, there's one God, but also that I am one with God. And that's, I like that though, the dynamo, you know, hooking to the dynamo. I like that. That sounds good. When we say there's one mind and that mind is God, and we add that mind is my mind now, that completes the thought, makes possible a loosing of the divine intelligence through our own imagination. This goes back. This goes back a long ways for me. This is, 20-25 years ago. I found this book called "What to Say When You Talk to Yourself" by Shadi Helmstetter. And while it has, you know, there's no religious overtones to it whatsoever, it's really tying back with what the Sacred Continuum says. Is it's what you're saying to yourself all the time. Are you negating, you know, you want certain things to happen in your life, but are you constantly negating them with, I can't, you know, I don't know how, I'm not good enough, all of those sort of things. Well, this whole book is affirmations on all different areas of your life. So what I did with it back then is I recorded the ones that I wanted to work on, and then every night before I'd go to sleep, I would listen to these recordings and go into sleep that way. I felt like it had a real powerful effect on my life. So I just wanted to mention that, because it's mundane compared to Sacred Continuum, but still it's along the same idea. also to remember about the words I am and what we put when we say I am. We need to really be aware of that throughout our days. You know, it's real easy to fall into the habit of your trip and say, oh, I am clumsy, and so on. You know, you can come up with all kinds of negativity with using I am, and so I think it's important that we be aware of making positive affirmations about ourselves, our lives, and our circumstances. I guess that's not easy to read. This is the emotional guidance scale. I know we've had this in study group several different times in the past years. And it's just a reminder that wherever you are in the emotional tone scale, if you're at the bottom, which is the last one is fear, and the top one is joy and bliss, anywhere along the line, don't try to jump from the bottom on all the way to the top, but reach for a better feeling. So whatever you're feeling, always reach higher. And here's Maxine saying, nobody knows the trouble I've seen, and nobody knows I caused most of it myself. I love Maxine.
And the dog's got more food where that came from.
Now this sounds like it's on a total different track altogether. This is a book I found called The Songs of Trees by David Haskell, professor of biology from the University of the South. And remember I said that my subtitle here was interconnectedness. So this is about trees. There's one.
Oh my gosh, I recognize that.
That's my little car. And that's a big hickory tree that on May 30th, we had a small tornado come through our area with high winds and hail and so on. And I was just getting ready to leave. In fact, I had walked out to the driveway and was going toward my car. And I was gonna deliver some letters to my homeowners association. And I got about halfway down the driveway toward my car, and all of a sudden there was this huge clap of thunder, lightning, and I said, uh-oh, I think the storm is gonna start. I better wait a while. And I went back in the house, and it was probably within 5 to 10 minutes later that tree came down and crushed my car. Yeah. So, and that was my most favorite tree on the property. It's a hickory tree, and it was the tallest tree on the property. It was in the middle of our circular driveway, and that tree provided nuts for the squirrels. Every winter, there would always be these little squirrels running from the forest across the backyard and running back with mouthfuls of hickory nuts. So the tree provided shelter for the birds, bird nests, and just a whole system. It was also the biggest shade area where I have all of my hostas and coral bells. They all have to be replanted now. So that was our experience just not very long ago, and there's where it came up.
Oh.
Tore it right out of the ground.
Lightning didn't care.
Pardon me?
The lightning did not care.
No.
Wow.
So from the Song of Trees, David Haskell says, trees are full of sound. Each sound tells a story about the tree's life in its home. These stories are about interconnection. Trees are made of relationships. A tree is not, despite appearances, a biological individual. Instead, it is a community of thousands of species all interacting in and around the tree. We can hear some of this conversation. And I wanted to use an example of my yard. This is my rhododendron, my Japanese maple, and a variegated weeping willow tree in my front yard. And every morning, the sound that I hear are the birds cheeping out, going down to the bird feeders, and I hear the breeze rustling through the trees. You know, the oak tree makes a lot of sound with the leaves, and there's just so many sounds. The dog next door barking, and the horses out in front, hear them walking through the pastures, and sometimes, you know, hearing the crunches. So many sounds. And Haskell says that these sounds around the tree are a manifestation of the inner nature of trees. Take away the connections between trees and their social network, and the trees wither and die. And there's an example of a rooftop garden where people living in a big city can have a garden and trees. They're on the very top of a building. He says, every leaf is made up not only of plant cells, but also of dozens of microscopic bacteria and fungi. Without these internal companions, the leaf is vulnerable to disease and drought. A leaf is a living community dependent on connections. Doesn't this sound like us? We're all interconnected. The same is true in roots. The growing root tip is haloed by a glow of life. I love the sound of that. Haloed by a glow of life. Microbes and fungi in constant chemical communication with plant cells. The plant sends food to its companions, who respond with minerals and waters. Trees and humans were in this together. Trees form gathering places for people, serving as hubs around which our social networks and culture grow. Trees unite us, and trees live well when given a place within the human social network, when it's connected to the people who live around it. And that shows how the trees themselves are interconnected. Now, this is a circle of life, and it says, to live and let live is to recognize the spirit within all living creatures, to recognize the sacredness of all life. And from Albert Einstein, he said, our task is to widen our circle of compassion, to embrace all living beings and all of nature. And I want to find out how many celebrated World Naked Gardening Day on May 6th.
I saw it on Facebook, I didn't
know. I didn't hear about it.
Jeannie Morton sent that to me. I just had to throw that in. It's an opportunity to pull weeds, plant flowers, and harvest vegetables while getting some sun where it usually doesn't shine. While you might get a little dirty, the intention is good, clean fun in the sun, and a move towards becoming more comfortable in our skin with non-sexual nudity. And I wanted to share with you from Abraham only a few very simple points of understanding are necessary for you to have the absolute joyful control of your own life experience. Accept that you are the creator of your own experience. Understand the power and importance of your thoughts. Accept your absolute connection to your own inner being. Understand that the emotions you feel are guidance from your inner being. And make a decision that nothing is more important than that you feel good. He's basically doing the five steps of treatment just in a different order and in different words. That's wonderful. And also in the Science of Mind magazine, the same issue with Albert Einstein, was a little article by Reverend Jesse Jennings. And he is a senior minister at the Creative Life Spiritual Center in Houston. And the title of this is Images of a Healed Nation. And the question was, how do I reconcile my spiritual practice with my alarm at where America appears to be heading? And the answer, this is done by focusing mentally and emotionally more on what you prefer to experience than what you do not. You are the final creative agency, the Supreme Court, so to speak, in your own life, no matter what has come before or the limitations imposed by others. All should pray, not just for things to come out all right, but for the resolve to know the one life has not stopped being just that, nor has love slipped from its place as the central flame of the universe. Whatever repair you feel society needs to undergo, imagine that it has already happened. Describe to yourself the world as beautiful, workable, and hospitable. Then carry that vision into all actions that follow. Once again, that's our interconnectedness and keeping our affirmations and our thoughts and feelings positive. And I wanted to end my talk with a closing from Ernest Holmes. He speaks with the most beautiful meditations, and he said that everything in his life, he always does a treatment for. All the little steps and all the big steps, and this was one that I took from his book. We surrender everything that denies the divine presence, the divine reality, the universal law of good. All of the love there is in the universe is right here, in our experience now, right now. All of the abundance, all of the glory, all of the good, all the peace, all the power, all the joy, and all the gratification. Now we know that everything we do shall be prospered and made happy. This word is what we are doing. What we are doing is this word. We shall bless and heal everything we touch without even being aware of it. Everything is made whole. Everything is healed and needs healing. Everything is made glad and happy and burst into a song. Everything is prospered. This is the law of our lives. We will it so. We decree it. We surrender everything that denies it. We affirm it, and so it is. So, wherever you live, whatever road you may travel, whoever your companions may be, at the close of each day, remember that you were loved and blessed. So smile and be happy. And so it is.
Oh, it is.
Thank you.